Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for the next in our draft countdown series. We're looking at The Edge today in the 2026 draft, and joining me is one of my favorite people to talk football with, James Ogden. James, how you doing?
I'm good, Ken. How are you?
Oh, always a pleasure, my friend. And Sunday afternoon, we're recording this on the 12th of April, just in case somebody has a scandal come out between now and the time you listen to this that might affect their thing. You know, have a timestamp on this for us. But appreciate having you, James. Well known for a lot of things, but for writing a really top-notch draft guide, but also for making the Ravens, announcing, I should say, not making. The Ravens' fourth-round draft pick last year, Teddy Buchanan.
Yes, yeah, it was an amazing thing. And there's going to be another draft pick announced live from the UK this year. Don't know who's going to be doing it this time around.
Why are you guys getting a second to announce another draft pick as opposed to some Baltimore people?
I think what they're doing is they're doing this thing where they've got these marketing rights in the UK, and I think what's happened is this year they've employed a marketing agency to try and help them. And I think the marketing agency have been like, can we not pick someone to have a draft pick announced? So I think they've kind of bowed to that. But it'll be interesting to see who it is, because apparently it's not anybody we know in the UK Ravens community, it looks like. So I don't know what they're going to do.
So it might be one of the Spice Girls or David Beckham or something like that, or what?
Well, that is the rumor, that it's one of these influencers, not necessarily one of, but I don't know who that's going to be. They've been trying to get some people to try and build the fan base in the UK, but it's been an interesting sort of choice of the way they've been doing it recently. So we'll see what it is. But they're bringing the cheerleaders and Poe, I think, over to Manchester for the day. So that'll be cool.
A lot of fun. It was a lot of fun meeting you for the game in Tottenham and the last time around, and all kinds of fun with the parties and whatnot. Let's talk a little Edge though for the 2026 draft cast. The Ravens' needs always come first in this, and this will always be a Ravens centric show. Did you do your 10-1 based on a Ravens centric format? That's certainly what I did. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So Ravens certainly have a need with Edge. They had Oweh traded during the season. Van Noy, Ajabo, and Draymond Jones all appear to be UFA departures. Now, Van Noy has not signed with anyone yet, but Ajabo and Draymond Jones have. And so we're just really waiting. It is possible that Van Noy would be back. The big offseason move, of course, to get Trey Hendrickson on a four-year deal. We're not even going to talk about the Max Crosby deal because, hey, this was the only big offseason move that I can remember right now. A two-year deal with 2 years of options, which I think is about right for a player like Hendrickson with a recent injury history. But I'm not too concerned about a groin injury as opposed to the knee injuries that Crosby has.
Yeah, no, I'm not either. I don't think it seemed like it's a thing that's checked out. I mean, he was all the way healthy by the time they did the physical, right? So to me, it feels right. It does change the thing that they might be looking for, right? I think because Hendrickson is just, you know, in some ways a better pass rusher than Crosby in terms of production. But you know, the run defense has got a bit overblown. Like, he's a serviceable run defender, and that's what they're going to need. But they're going to potentially need to, I think one of the reasons why they looked so hard at Crosby was because of Minter's scheme and the way they play the run, which is sort of necessitates them having an edge defender and edge rusher who can really play the run hard. And so it'll be interesting to see how he gets around that with Hendrickson to an extent. And so it may be that they were looking for a slightly different type of player. I'm not sure that it would necessarily affect it too much high up the board. It might change the nuance of the where people are rated, but I think there may be some other, you know, like when we come to talk about our kind of honorable mentions, there's a couple of guys I'm thinking about that are demon run defenders with a little bit of pass rush upside rather than the other way around.
Yeah, might be day three guys or outside of the top 10 for Edge. I will say I really highlighted that in what I want to get to at the end of what are the Ravens are really looking for in terms of their ideal draft, drafted edge rusher. I don't think Trey Hendrickson is going to be on the field nearly as much as he was in Cincinnati. I think he's going to, you know, he should be playing less given his age, and I think he'll be more of a situational guy here. And the Ravens have Tavius Robinson playing on that side of the field typically, who is a, you know, run defense is really his calling card. We want him to play his best run defense, but run defense is his calling card. The Ravens have, I think they'll go for a draftee and probably a veteran as well. They've had a lot of success with veterans, Van Noy, Clowney, Houston, JPP, and Ngakoue, McPhee. who've all come on relatively bargain UFA contracts and rush the passer pretty well here. Do you see another vet as a good possibility?
It has to be, I think. I think they're going to have to bring in another veteran body in that can, it just feels like it has to be a vet as well as a rookie. I think that, like you said, I think they will be looking for a rookie in this class. It's an interesting position to talk about, actually, right? Because it does feel like that they could take an edge at any point, really. Like they've set themselves up to the point where it could be a high pick, but it could also be a more of a developmental guy, and that might change who they go after in free agency, I suppose.
Ravens do a very good job of that year after year of not having a glaring need that's so great that they have to make their first round pick there. And, you know, one of the really nice things about this draft is not needing a left tackle, not needing an offensive tackle. And that's not to say that they couldn't use one. Stanley's maybe a year away from retirement. I don't know how much they really believe in Carson Vinson, but he certainly, I think, at least from a developmental perspective, had as good a first year as you could have. You know, if you're a pure developmental offensive tackle, making a double jump up to the NFL, you're not really expected to get on the field at all, and then you beat Joe Noteboom out of his job. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think so too. Like I think we did offensive tackles last year. I think that was the one I came on with you for. And I'm pretty sure if people go back, I think Carson Vinson was my honorable mention, sort of outside the top 10 developmental guy. So you go back and check that out. I don't usually toot my own horn. But anyway, that was last year. I think it'd be it's been an interesting draft to watch the tackles, right? Because you're sort of looking at it and thinking, do any of these guys raise up enough, high up enough to take them as a developmental project that you can wait for a couple of years? Or is Vinson that guy and you don't need to worry about that? Versus, can you see one of these guys kicking inside and playing inside? And I felt like some of the guys that were candidates to kick inside, just there were certain parts of their game that I worried a little bit about in terms of kicking them inside. There's a couple of guys with a really sort of an anchor that I would be concerned about if you were kicking them inside, and that then sort of made you think, well, then they're only a tackle probably, and then I'm not sure I'd take them that high. It became a difficult class to watch in terms of tackles.
Anchor is a problem at all offensive line positions, honestly, even at tackle. But
absolutely,
you're right. You do want that. You value the mirror a little bit more than the anchor, probably, at those positions. But I am very high on Fano. I think he's one of the guys who the Ravens should really consider at number 14. Higher on him than on Vega. And so we'll see how they turn out. And it's fairly close. I wouldn't be that upset if the Ravens end up with either. But I think that the four position flexibility of Fano, which I really consider to be anything from left guard to the right, I think he could do.
Yeah, I'm going to add you to the list of, I'm a little bit lower on Fano, not horrendously lower, like just a little bit lower. And I'm going to add you to the list of people I respect who are higher on him and makes me feel like I'm wrong. So
that's okay. This is where I felt about Starks last year versus Emenwori. But anyway, you can still be right. I guarantee you. David Ajabo moved on. A very disappointing 4 years with the Ravens. I don't think there's a lot we need to say about it right now. You know, one disappointing player otherwise is Adisa Isaac, who's essentially lost his first 2 years to injury, enters year three, will be very hard pressed, I think, to win a job. The Ravens will probably show up with six guys in camp or seven, with him being number six on that list and them only keeping five.
Yeah, and this is the first year where, for a very long time, where we're saying new coaching staff, no connection to some of these players that were brought in as developmental guys who have not necessarily seen the field and not hit expectations. This coaching staff will not hesitate moving on quickly and getting their own guys. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. I want to toss out what I think are the ideal characteristics of the draftee. And as I was going through, this influenced how I move people up and down the board. The first ones is that, if you can play Sam linebacker, that would be a really nice thing. They have their rush linebacker in Hendrickson. He's not a guy or rusher, their rush side rusher. If you're going to have a guy who drops the coverage some and you want that flexibility, which the Ravens do want in a Derwin James / Hamilton type defense, as Minter is used to running, then I think, you know, they'd like to have a Tyus Bowser type. And there are a lot of guys in this draft who have significant Sam linebacker chops, and that has not been the case recently. I always have struggled to find the Sams.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. My grading is so the grading I run for my guide is slightly different in the sense that it won't prioritize need. I sort of do that afterwards when I look at it afterwards. And so this, my ratings are not necessarily going to prioritize SAMs over Rush. What they will prioritize though is what they're looking for at the position, I think, and what a scheme fit is for them and what they, yeah. I feel like there's been a lot of talk, and I think Edge is one of the positions where I think it's probably going to show out the most about sort of tone setting and like changing the culture a little bit, trying to go back to what it means to play like a Raven. And it feels like they've, at Edge especially, they have moved away from that in recent years to these more sort of explosive, leaner guys than they've done over the course of a long period of time. I think we probably go back, probably since DaCosta took over, we've started to see that move toward more leaner, explosive edge rushers. And I wonder whether that there'll be a shift back again from the way that the discourse that the way they've been talking, that's how I felt, they might go back a little bit to what they used to do.
There's certainly been a lot of vet guys they brought in as moving pieces. Okay. But what I have a hard time identifying a trend as opposed to is the fact they had Terrell Suggs forever. And he represents the other category, a generational edge setter. And they had Jarrett Johnson essentially forever, for a long period in there that he was that guy. But I agree. They've tried with other guys to bring in that player. They thought Ferguson was probably that guy. And they certainly thought that Courtney Upshaw was that sort of player. You couldn't have thought anything else, honestly. But anyway, it doesn't always work out with the guys. So I give you two other characteristics I think they're really looking for. And that is, the first, they need to relieve Mike Green of an early down role so he could be a situational pass rusher. I think they're really looking for that. So they want a guy who can play early downs. And that means he has this, can play the run is what they want from that side. And then number three, and I want you to respond to that as well, but he has the size and strength to kick inside on passing downs just in case Matabike is not able to play much or at all or effectively, any of those three. So those two characteristics, I wanted you to get your opinion on that, whether you think, does this move a guy like Bain, who can certainly move inside, does it move him higher up the list?
I think it does. I don't know that it would move him up the list, but it would certainly be a consideration when you start to look at the list as a whole and say, because I do think there's some guys in this class that are bunched quite close together. You sort of look at it and say, okay, this guy can do this, this, and this. That might be a better fit for us in terms of what we're looking for right now. And I think Bain's certainly one of those that, and we'll get to him, but that could kick inside. There's some other guys as well, actually, in this class that could kick inside. To be honest, I think the best at it was his teammate at Miami. And he had some of his best pass rushes kicked inside, to be honest. But that's another conversation, right, that I'm sure we'll get to. But
he wouldn't be in the top 10, would he? Just kidding. I had a little debate with people about his age, he's still there. Okay. let's move on, jump right into it. We're giving away too much of the plot here, but who's your number 10 guy?
So my number 10 guy is it's funny, number 10. So my grading, I probably mentioned this before, I think on these podcasts, I do a performance and a potential grade. So the grade that they get in performance is what I think they are now. Then they have a potential grade, which is higher. So the first guy, I'll get to in a second, has a 4.27 grade for his performance, but then he has a 4.91 grade for his potential. So it sort of says, here he is now, there's a big jump to who he could be in the future. Now I don't really, I try to make some kind of estimate about whether he would get there, but there's like, the bigger the distance, the harder it is for them to get there, right?
Okay, so two things about this. The first is, I want to have you on for a separate show where we go through your grading system, because I'm very interested in what are you measuring, or what are you grading, and how are you weighting these factors? I'd be very interested in the weighting in particular.
To be honest, we might have to do it off the show, and you can help me evolve the grading system, because the weighting is a real issue I have at the moment. I'm tweaking it every year, and it's still not quite right, to be honest. Then it needs a lot of work. So, but it's at its essence, that's what it does. But yeah, it'll be great to have that conversation.
We do want to make sure that folks take a look at least at James's draft guide. You've got some sample pages, no doubt, out there and some other things. And then it's available for sale this year.
It's free. I just give it away free every year. Yeah.
Free. So can you believe that?
It's coming in a couple of days. It's almost there. So
okay. Make sure you look at it. It's very well done. And James is one of my favorite people to talk football with. So you know that I'm going to respect the opinions. But I think it would be interesting to do that together. If you're interested, certainly I'll spend a lot of time, as much time as you really want to spend on it in terms of waiting, grading things. Okay.
That would be awesome, Ken. Yeah. So the first guy is a 4.27 with a 4.91 potential. There's actually a bunch of guys on 4.27 with a lesser potential than this guy.
How many factors? So it, and is this a 1 point per factor?
It's 11 factors, and it's a 1 to 6 grading scale on those factors. And so then it averages out across those for the grade. So this guy is interesting. There is a bunch of guys at 4.27 that are on less potential than this guy. So I could see my way to understand, like, there are about four or five guys who are in the candidate for the 10th spot, basically. This guy's the highest ceiling, so that's why he gets the 10th spot.
Okay, so 4.27, he got 47 out of a possible 66 points. All even point allocations, no.
All even point allocations, yeah.
Okay. All right, great. Who is it?
It's a huge reveal for Jay Sean Barham out of Michigan. Okay. And there are, obviously you can see immediately why the potential grade is so high, is because the kid only played one season outside linebacker. I don't know that he's definitely going to get there. Like, there's a lot to do for him to get to that higher ceiling, but he's an intriguing prospect for me because that one season of playing potential of that one season of playing there was pretty good in lots of ways, and he showed a lot of signs, you know, really quick first step. I thought it was like he's still learning the position, so that first step was quite inconsistent depending on what kind of situation he was in down and distance. So like, there's some potential for growth there in terms of sort of getting used to the position a bit more. I thought he had some really nice bend when he was cornering to get to the edge, working his hands to finish. Starting to begin to understand how to set up the offensive lineman with his footwork, nice change of direction, explosion. Like, I thought he had a cross chop that was really good. It was accurate and violent. He just didn't use it very often. And this was the sort of variation on a theme for him, was that there was lots of stuff that was really good that I really liked, but it was just really inconsistent and not necessarily well put together yet. And so you kind of looked at it and thought there's definitely something here, but I kind of liked the way he played the run, bringing his linebacker instincts to the way he played the run, getting in the backfield, making explosive plays against outside zone. I think the Ravens are going to like that, and the way that he sort of slashes into the backfield. Obviously, offensive linemen with good length, flat strength, like could neutralize him quite a lot at the moment, especially when he came to try and run a power move. I don't think he's built up an arsenal of moves yet or putting it together in a very good plan as a pass rusher. Does have some skill, some movement skills, obviously, as an ex-linebacker, so I think he could play Sam down the line. I think lots of areas for development, but it felt like a reasonably exciting potential, and the fact that he just got up to 4.27 then launched him up the board a bit for me, and because of that potential, that the higher ceiling with him.
Yeah, I love Barham. He did not make my list. I have him at number 16, but I would love him as a day three pick. There are a lot of things about him, but you mentioned one of them is he's played a lot of off-ball linebacker in his life. He has a lot of, in his college career, has a lot of coverage time at Michigan. But I think he'd be a guy who would make a very reasonable Sam candidate. 785 college coverage snaps, has a little bit of bend, good change of direction, I thought, from when he's rushing to go to screen defense. That's important for that. So you get some good recognition there. A lot of the Michigan players, very well coached. They tend to have that. Not at all polished as a pass rusher. He needs some other kind of planned or timed move to the inside, really, to make that a dangerous side that the tackle will overset and give him a chance and whatnot. College missed tackle rate was not especially good at 11.1%, but he did make up for it, I thought, by making 107 stops. So part of that's being an off-ball linebacker, and there's more of a responsibility to be in the right gap and stop the run and whatnot, but it's good. It's certainly good. He only had 162 pass rush snaps in 25, but he had 82 pressures and 424 career pass rush snaps, which is a good total, but You have to be careful about this. When you look at totals that include players who have both off ball and hand in the dirt experience, the hand in the dirt guys will always have lower pressure rates, or the at the far right end of the curve that we're looking at, they'll always have lower pressure rates. And that's why we look at some players in this draft, like Arvel Reese is the same kind of player who has an absurd pass rush success rate, but you have to keep that in mind. What else is there to say? He's from Maryland. That's a good, pretty average athletic profile across the board. Jumps are just okay. A 161 10 yard is pretty good, but I liked him too. I'm not a number 80 pick. He checks all the boxes for me at 115. I'd be okay trading up from there, but 80 would be too rich.
I think I would be the same. I think I would be the same. I think I am a little higher on him than you, obviously, with the 16 versus 10. But I think that's this discussion is a really good illustration of this draft class, right? Which is that, like, you're, especially at the edge position, because there's so many of them, that you're sort of 16 and 10, there's not a whole lot of difference. And it's kind of, what are you betting on? Are you betting on this working out? Are you betting on this working out, but you're not betting on that? And you're kind of splitting hairs a little bit about what you're betting on. And it's kind of a bit sort of finger in the air. So it's a really interesting class from that perspective. And what you say you're 16, I say I'm 10, you really like him, it's kind of, there's not a whole load of difference. You're just sort of picking your flavor and seeing what you think will work and what won't work at the next level.
Yeah, I'll be absolutely very excited if they pick him. So let's clear that up for starters. But I'll give you an idea of where I want him. My number 10 guys are Mason Thomas of Oklahoma. Very twitchy outside linebacker, multiple leg injuries in 4 years at Oklahoma. That is the big downside, a medical knock on him. He's a little bit undersized at 6'2", 241, and 31 at 5'8", inch arms. Runs at 4.67. One of the real good things, and age is a big issue, in the edge class, but in the draft, across the board, because of all the NIL money that's been handed out by certain programs, Texas Tech, he's not in the older group of players to be 22 in August anyway. So that's a big, big positive. Only had 191 pass rush snaps this last year, but 28 pressures of various sorts, 70% from the offensive left side. He's been 14% in coverage in his career, which is more than most. There, a lot of guys are in the 7-8% range in this draft. And he has a very high missed tackle rate for his career, but he's really made up for it with a lot of stops. And I kind of like that. I think the missed tackle rate can, some guys 10% of it can be fixed, and some guys 40% of it can be fixed. And if he's a guy who, can fix 30% of that and maintain his, ability to make big plays near the line of scrimmage that are defensive wins, then I'm positive on that. Anyway, 40% career close rate, which is outstanding. That's his sacks plus his quarterback hits divided by his total pressures. And I'm using the contribution method because the PFF numbers are easier to use for that. But I know there's a lot of half sacks in there that they're counting as full sacks. So just take that as what it is. He's targeted just 5 times and 104 coverage drops, which is pretty darn good for a guy who, is not getting picked on when he drops. Injury history is a bunch of stuff. It's quad in 2025, ankle in 2023, missed 4 games each year, hamstring in 2022, missed 3 games. Kind of sounds like Lamar Jackson's 2025 right here in terms of the set of injuries. I'm not trying to make light of it, but that's really what it sounds like. Only has about 1.5 years of top shelf production as a pass rusher spread over 2 seasons, but it's healthy play in the SEC. I think that's okay. He had a fumble return versus Tennessee. It's a highlight worth watching. If you can see it, it's a Fred Flintstone move where he drags a tight end, 20 yards? You remember? It's just fantastic. has that quickness to threaten the A-gap as a 2-gap looper. That is something I really like to see in an edge rusher when they have that sort of quickness. And he demonstrates that on tape regularly, his willingness to do that. Hunts the football as a pass rusher. He has 4 career forced fumbles. He really tries to use the club on a regular basis. I think he corners well. The weakness is length and the losses that causes offensive tackles occasionally. Borderline Sam candidate probably. Seems to me... He likes to rush, though, versus the uncovered tackle. So those two things stand in opposition to each other because the Sam linebacker plays on the tight end side. So that being what it is, he's probably not an ideal fit with the Ravens. With Henderson there, he would almost have to move to Sam. But he's among the names that I think the Ravens would consider at 45, and probably they'll have, you know, four names on their board who they have that have dropped to, you know, dropped in their laps at that point. I think he's a run-up pick at number 80. If he's still there at number 80, I'm all over that.
Yeah, so he's my number 9 guy. So kind of have that, yeah, very, very close in that from that perspective. I think the reason why he isn't higher for me is that I'm skeptical about whether he's going to ever be more than a situational pass rusher, really. Like, I think he can get on the field. So the stops for me that I saw were majority one of his strengths, which is he's relentless in his pursuit from the backside. The amount of plays he chases down from the backside. And there's a total value in that. Like, I'm certainly not devaluing that.
But it does inflate the total, your point is those kind of stops are better. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, absolute value in that. But I think what I struggled with, especially if he's going to play Sam, is that some of the things, you know, when he sees, I think he saw outside zone when he's play side. I think he saw it a bit late, basically. And generally didn't time his hands particularly well or be particularly accurate or getting leverage when he's playing play side and setting the edge. He's just not a very competent run defender right now. Now there's a chance there's something there. Like I said, there is something there. But for me, I think he's a situational pass rusher that is intriguing as a situational pass rusher. That's why he's my number 9 guy. Like, I would completely agree with you. I think he's got a whippet dip and rip move, which sort of takes advantage of that small stature that he's got to get that natural leverage. I agree with you. I thought he was really effective with his cornering, low center of gravity, making him really hard to stop when he gets to the top of his rush. Quick, violent hands, good foot quickness. He's got a really nice stab club move to turn the corner. There was some really nice stuff in his pass rush that have me have him here, right? But I think it'd be an interesting one. He'd be a guy that I just couldn't countenance in the second round because of the fact that I don't know whether he stays on the field enough. And I feel like the role that you would slot him into right now, if he came onto the Ravens squad right now, is the guy who pushes Adisar Isaac off the team. In terms of the snaps he'd get in year one. So I couldn't see him raising up too much further up the pecking order. And it feels a bit, doesn't feel right to take that in the second. But I agree with you in the third. I think because of the pass rush skills, it's something that, but I'd be surprised if he's there in the third.
I guess I would be too. But if he is the guy, okay, and then they also get a vet, does it now become a case of you move him to Sam and he splits time with Green on early downs, and this veteran, maybe the veteran gets some of it too, particularly if it's Kyle Van Noy. I mean, I guess he can play some run defense still, you know, or they could get a Jadeveon Clowney, and he certainly is a competent run defender.
Yeah, there's definitely a path to him being on the field, and I think the pass rush will be hard to ignore. Like, I do think it is gonna. A lot of the pass rush is going to play at the next level. Like it is. Like, I think he's going to be a guy who, on obvious passing downs, is going to. And it's an interesting philosophical question, I think, for the Ravens about what do they want to do? Do they want to, like, with the Hendrickson move? Do they want like the Eagles? Do they want guys in waves? Like, is that what they're looking for? Are they looking for a bunch of pass rushers that can come in waves at you? If that's the case, this is a definite. Like, definite guy that should be on your radar. But, or do you want a guy, because the Ravens have traditionally looked for guys who can develop into full-time players, to three down players at the position. But do they sort of change their philosophy a little bit under Minta? It's something that we just can't know at this point. But I think he's a guy, even if you're not necessarily looking for the full version of somebody, his pass rush is the pass rush potential is that good that you would have to consider him at least later on day two.
It's fair to say, though, I think that since Suggs, who was the last guy who played an exorbitant number of snaps, in fact, one year, you know, he missed just a handful of snaps the whole year in his DPOY year, I think that was the year. But since then, I mean, since Suggs, they've really been a very heavily rotational, not only on the defensive line where they always were, they've always been rotational there, but they've gone to much more rotation at the edge position. And in fact, I felt like the times that they've had an edge who's played 70% of the snaps, it's been largely a matter of injuries that they get to that point.
You think? I think the way I've seen the way they've done it is that I feel like they over the years, and it's changed maybe a little bit over the last couple of years, but they have succession planned at the position, and they come in waves, and it's by committee, but it's with the intention of getting a guy towards the end of his rookie contract to be more of the guy. And they've sort of developed them to the point where you get more and more snaps. It's not like someone comes in and gets, you know, 30% of the snaps and that's where they stay for the rest of their rookie contracts. They are trying to get someone to a higher snap count. That's how I felt that they've worked it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Look, so Tavius Robinson, for example, has been someone who's advanced his snap count from 30% as a rookie, which is pretty good, up high. Green last year was a trial by fire where he played, 60% of the snaps and was more than probably was good. Owe, from fairly early on was playing a lot of snaps. And then you see, because they've had so much success with the vets, they brought in guys like Clowney and Van Noy and Pernell McPhee in particular. Pernell McPhee came in and they literally, I literally said, okay, 15 snaps a game. That's what they can really expect to get from Pernell McPhee. He's going to be purely a situational pass rusher. All of a sudden you get to camp. He's their best run defender. He's their best pass rusher. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S., BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support and therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. And they played him every bit as much as they could. And they did that for, a year and a half there between 18 and 19. And they got great mileage out of him, don't get me wrong. But it was probably bound to fail at some point, and he did get hurt finally and had to be reduced. All right, I'm going to jump ahead here because we're 30 minutes in and we're not going as fast as I would hope. So my number nine guy, since your number nine guy was Armason Thomas, my number nine guy is Zion Young of Missouri, a well-known name in this draft, certainly, a big and somewhat ponderous edge, wins with length, wins it with power versus the run and versus the pass, 6'6", 262, 33-inch arms, 475 at his pro day. So we look at that with a jaundiced eye, as we often term it. He'll be 22, or he is 20, just turned 22 in March, and DWI arrest in December. I don't look at that. I sure as hell don't look at that the same way I look at domestic violence or other things. I mean, DWI is something that a stupid mistake that a lot of young men make, and it's something that I don't condone it. I have more of a tolerance for it than, you know, hitting a woman or doing any of the other things that might be involved in this. Three forced fumbles, five passes defensive over the last two seasons. He hunts the football a little bit, knows how to get his arms up. He showed an extreme shift from his time at Michigan State. He was there for 2 years and then 2 years at Missouri, from being a run defender to a pass rusher. He played 50% pass snaps his first three seasons. That's really a run defense specialist at the edge position, and 58% pass snaps as a senior at Missouri. So you sometimes you see a shift like that where there's a guy who they really trust to do the pass rushing, but he's a fairly extreme case. What I love about him, and this is one of the three important things, he has that size to kick inside and rush nickel looks. He only did so 19 times in 2025. I think that was probably just a matter of circumstance. He clearly is big enough to do it. He clearly is powerful enough to do it. I think it would be exciting to have the potential for games with him and Jones on the inside on a passing down. I've got a bunch of rush notes for him as well. I think sets the edge well, reacts to the QB well. When you have the quarterback climbing the pocket a little too early. So a lot of quarterbacks, they drop back and then they automatically kind of step up. It's a squirreliness in quarterbacks that you sometimes will see to do that because it does give things away. And then if you have oversetting offensive tackles, that can really put the quarterback in jeopardy there. He was penalized 6 times in 2025. What I saw from on tape, he had a very clear emphasis not to drop his weight on the quarterback or impact the helmet. So I'm a little surprised by that. I wasn't able to break that down and see if are those all just offsides flags or were there 3 roughing the passer flags in there. I don't have that. Do you have any source of that?
No.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Anyway, project rush outside linebacker only. It's not a perfect fit for Hendrickson, but I think Zion Young would be significantly higher if he weren't just a rush guy.
Cool. Yeah, he's my number 6, so a little bit higher for me. I know there are quite a few people that are quite high on him. For me, he's you hit on most of the things. I think he's what I liked about him is that he's got the rush plan of a pro already. Like he knows when and how to target different offensive line at different times throughout the game. And obviously his power moves are great. But the thing about his power moves, I think he's particularly proficient at setting up offensive linemen to be able to enact his power moves. Like he's someone who is able to work that across the course of a game, but also sort of rep to rep, he sets guys up really well to come through them. So his footwork's really nice. I do think he's got some bend and dip like to him. It's not the best, but there is a little bit there to take the edge. And I do think he corners reasonably well. I think the power moves are really great. Like the speed conversion to power is fantastic. He'll come through even really heavy set offensive tackles with the way he sets up the move and the play strength he comes at it with. I do think he's a really good run defender on the play side against outside zone, like sets a really good edge, great hand timing, placement, leverage to control the point of attack. I think he sees kick out block coming. I think you occasionally see teams try to run a backside cutoff on him with a tight end and he just annihilates the tight end. So he's got so much power to him. I think there's some things that are holding him back from being like a guy who you'd consider really highly. Like I think I would consider him in the second round. The problem is I think there are going to be some really interesting players available for the Ravens at 45. He'd certainly be in the list for me. But the things that are holding him back for me are, he's not blowing past any offensive tackles with his first couple of steps. And when he's facing an offensive lineman that sort of matches his length, he doesn't have a whole lot in his arsenal to win up the field with. And the problem is if you have an absence of an effective outside move like that, I think at the next level, it can affect you. And offensive tackles are less easily set up for power moves and inside moves if you don't have that outside move. So that's quite important, I think. Go ahead, Ken.
That's a really good point. And I just want you to explain that to people because the way I think of it is you need to have some ability to get under the shoulder of the tackle, under the outside shoulder, in order to set up a speed to power move. You have to be working a half man move up front and then convert that to something where you can push the tackle back effectively into the pocket. But is there more to that that you would describe?
I think so. I think the particular nuance that I bring with him is that he has quite long arms. Like I think it's 33-inch arms, which is fine. Like it's good. But when he started to face some of those guys with longer arms who are using an outside strike, there was not much up the field. And so when he's facing some of those guys that have less long arms and their outside strike isn't as potent, there was a bit more of a threat up the field. So when he, as you mentioned, when he does come back inside, or when he does try to come through them, it's a different thing. They've had to really care about, as you mentioned, the half-man relationship. They're caring about that, especially when they're vertical setting. They're trying to make sure that he doesn't beat them up the field because they are a little bit threatened by it. But at the NFL level, like the guys with the ridiculous length, I mean, the guys, probably 70% of the guys he's going to face are going to have longer arms. And so he's going to, maybe not 70, not 60%.
Maybe higher.
Long run. So he's gonna need to find a way to do that, I think. The other problem is with his power moves, when he was facing some of those better offensive tackles, I wanted a more finish from him. So I felt like there were offensive linemen, when they had good recovery skills, could get back into the rep even when they'd been knocked backwards. They could reset, re-anchor, and hold him off the quarterback. So I wanted to see a bit more finish basically from him. So I really like him, and I think there's a lot of potential there. Like, not a lot of potential. There is a bit of potential there, certainly not as much as some others. But what I really liked for the Ravens, right, is that I am looking for a power guy. Like, I'm looking for a guy who can defend the run. And I'm looking for a guy with some pass rush upside, as I mentioned at the start. And so that's why he's probably a little bit higher up my board, I would say.
Okay. I'd be very happy with him at 45. And you're saying there'd be other, this is weird because you almost seem to be more reluctant about him. Yeah, I've got him at number 9. You've got him at number 6. I want him at 45. You're saying, I think there'll be other players also to compete with that.
I think so. I think for me, the strength of this draft is that part of the draft. Like, I think the strength of this draft is going to be 25 to 60, the way I've sort of seen it. That's a bit too wide a range, but I think the Ravens are really well positioned in the second round. It feels like there will be something fall to them. I don't think it's going to be Zion Young, because by all accounts he's going to go earlier than 45, but he would be in the list. I think the problem for me is there will be other guys on that list that will get there, I think. And so you're sort of looking at it and thinking, I think he would end up being around, if I just look at my board, he's probably around the 40th ranked player on my board. So that's decent value at 45. But I'm being a bit greedy, I think, with this 45 pick. Like, I want a bit higher up my board at this.
Well, it should be, because there's going to be inefficiency on the board, inefficiency on draft night. You're going to have the Raiders making two selections before that, and they'll blow both of them. And actually, they're going to blow Mendoza. But there are certain teams that just year after year they surprise you with Cleveland, yeah, Farrell or Arvell or all these Darius Hayward Bay. That are just reach for players that are in an unexpected way, and that creates inefficiency in the draft. And inefficiency, lack of economy, I guess is the way to put it correctly, is teams making picks they could have had a round or two later if they'd have been willing to just hold out on them. But anyway, I that's cool. Okay, so we both like Zion Young. We both like to have him maybe at number 45, but we'll see. So who do you have as your number 8 guy?
So my number 8 guy, sorry, I moved off my list because I went onto my full list. My number 8 guy is Gabe Akass. Really like Akass. Akass. I think it's Akass, isn't it?
It's Akass. Akass.
Akass. Is it Akass? Mm-hmm. I really liked Akass. I think he's a solid starting rush linebacker in the NFL who has the potential, I think, if he wins more consistently with his power moves, to keep offensive linemen off his strikeout pitches, I think, to be a real difference maker at the position. I think he's got really good get off, nice bend speed, speed and bend to roll through the half man. It's really hard. He has a speed rip that is really hard to combat. It's a very simple move that you see most edge rushers use, but his is really difficult to combat. He's got a really nice feel for counters when he's rushing the passer. He sort of understands when he needs to move to a secondary or even a tertiary move. Quick, violent spin move when his upfield rush has been covered by an oversetting offensive lineman, like that type of thing. Things are a really powerful long arm move, well placed, deployed with leverage, power. And after a good get off, he can really walk offensive tackles into the backfield. And he does also disengage and get after the quarterback well, I thought. Same deal when he's converting speed to power. I really liked how explosive he was on stunts and games and when he's rushing inside. This was a guy who I could see rush inside. Not necessarily the kind of heaviest set guy that you would like to rush inside, but I do think when I saw him rush inside, there was definitely potential there. Thought he defended inside zone really well. Patient against option attack. And I did like when he set the edge. He's not a guy who's going to constrict running lanes, but he is a guy who's going to get his hands on quickly, build a bit of a trench, and he can shed and make a tackle and either gap. The thing I wanted to see a bit more from him, I wanted to see more idea of better of runs more quickly, understanding what the play design is and what they're looking to do to sort of penetrate a little bit too quickly sometimes and gave up the outside. I also didn't necessarily see him sell the upfield rush as well as he could when he's sort of slanting inside to try and get across the offensive lineman's face. So that I want to see a bit better from him with that. And I do think I felt like he get held up a bit as a backside defender, but I really like him. And I do think he's a guy who, again, I don't like him as much as Zion Young. So again, a guy who I probably wouldn't consider 45 or maybe he's a weird one. Cause I think he's probably in the middle for me between the two picks. But a guy who I really liked and I felt fit the Ravens quite well.
Okay. Akis also happens to be my number eight guy, powerful edge with kick in potential. So it's some of the same things. He's very much to my way of thinking, he's a shed then chase player. So you got a lot of bull then shed players. He's really a shed then chase player. So he wants to get rid of the guy who's in front of him as quickly as possible. And he has some of the quickness and the power to do it. Pass rush productivity was really high this last year. 15.6% career missed tackle rate is not good. He has two consecutive years of top pass rush production in the Big Ten. It came with a 41.5% career close rate. That is just outstanding. Normally, when I see a close rate over 40%, the first thought is it's really not a stable level. Like, it's very hard to maintain that. Adafi Owe had a rate very close to 50% 2 years ago. And then last year he you know, went way down. Actually, last year he had in 24, he had the really great close rate. In 25, the year he was traded, he might have had a great close rate for the Chargers. I didn't look at it, but he certainly didn't have a good close rate for the Ravens when he was there. So it tends to not be stable year after year. Anyway, like Akis in terms of violent hand usage, the rip move, you mentioned the rip move for him, right? It wasn't, then I don't need to say it again. I think his solid bend, it's really not exceptional to get around the corner. I thought, you know, in looking at him, it's interesting. You mentioned a spin move, and I thought that's something he could really use, is a Euro or spin move. So it's sometimes you watch the same player and you come up with two different thoughts about it. It happens. But there are certain guys bring out the spin move from time to time. I thought Akis was a fairly straightforward rusher in terms of trying to get the edge, and another inside move would really help him. He's a forced fumble waiting to happen, 7 in the last 37 games with one fumble recovery. Big part of his value, big part of his value is the club and flip the field value. Not at all a Sam candidate. He's allowed only 5.5 yards per target on 29 career targets and 199 drops. But I think that he's at 6'4", 260, more likely he's going to be kicking inside. He's going to be playing over a guard on those third downs where you might like to try something and get Kyle Hamilton a run at the quarterback, for example. I think he would initially play on the offensive right side, have a limited coverage role. He need to be coached up to improve his run defense, given his play strength. I don't really see that as a big problem. He could see some time at three tech on passing downs and more likely be a guy who splits time with Green on that side, and allows Mike to transition really more into a situational pass rusher. So those things, you know, gave him advantages with him, but you know, the youth and potential development for Akis are significant potential advantages. All right. All right. Anything more before we close that out? Are you ready to move on to your number seven?
Yep. So my number seven is Malachi Lawrence, which is a little bit of a sort of departure of what I'm necessarily looking for the Ravens. But I really liked his potential as a pass rusher. And so I found it hard to keep him off my list. I do think he's probably going to play in the 3-4. I think he probably is going to be a rush linebacker in the Ravens scheme. Like, there is potential maybe that he could, like, he has the athleticism to drop. I didn't see it particularly great. So that, like, maybe that is something down the line where he could potentially move into a Sam. But at the moment I saw him more as a pure sort of pass rusher. I do think he's got a really high ceiling. I think he's got excellent first step quickness off the ball, gains ground stupidly quickly with his second and third steps, sort of really compromising the half man quickly. I think he's got an intriguing long arm move, sort of uses his leverage to exert his play strength, got a really good feel for a counter off the move as well to make sure he climbs into the pocket for a pressure. He has some counters that I like when some stuff gets stalemated. He's got a nice ball slip, push pull, two hand shook, like those power moves where your power move is getting stalemated. He's finding ways to get off blocks, which is really nice to see. I do think he's an explosive athlete who really sets up his moves well with his footwork. Active hands, high motor, relentless. Do you think he set quite a reasonably hard edge in the run game with good placement and timing with his hands? Liked how he kept an off hand often to rip through with an arm over to sort of disengage and chase down a runner inside. Sometimes that gave him a little bit of trouble as well, but something to look at. Again, not a guy who, when I say set a hard edge, I don't mean he's not a guy who's going to constrict running lanes. Like he's not gonna close down some of those lanes. So he can get moved, but probably not enough to open a big lane. There were some moves he whiffed on, like he whiffs on his cross chop far too often and doesn't counter well off it. So there's a sort of lack of polish to some moves are really well put together, some are really unpolished. But there's so much potential because of how violent his hands are and how explosive he is. Same can be said for his counters, I think. A lot are not quite refined enough yet. And I do think there was some. Like there were some instances where he just didn't maintain his balance as he cornered, which I'd like to see him sort of clean up at the next level. But I think he's all action. I think he's got high potential. I think he's got a good ceiling to him. I think you like find a guy who the thing I like about when I'm looking for potential is like, is it fundamental stuff or is it he needs to refine this move? He needs to refine this move. He needs to refine this move. And can you get him in with a good coaching staff and that gets done? So I really liked him. I think he would end up in the rotation pretty immediately. And I would put him on the same plane, I think, as Zion Young here, in terms of what I would be looking at from him in terms of where I would value him, I think.
Okay. Well, fair enough. I have him lower. And I'll tell you why. And a lot of the reasons why I have him lower are because of his fit with the Ravens specifically. But I have him number 15. Fantastic athlete, no doubt about it. You covered that, so I don't think I really need to. But he's in the 98th percentile of jumps and has a 159 10-yard, which is outrageous for an edge. That's really terrific. Pass rush productivity was okay. He has the size to kick inside, maybe. Did so 30 times in 2025. That's in the Big 12. That's where UCF. You know, it snuck up on me that they're in the Big 12, but they've been there for 3 years now, you know, kind of thing. It's like, is that a Sun Belt team or, you know, what are they? But anyway, 22.4% career missed tackle rate. that's the big knock. Now, right. So the Ravens are look. What are the three characteristics the Ravens are looking for? A, Sam linebacker. That ain't Malachi Lawrence. Okay. B is a guy who can really defend the run. 22.4% missed tackle rate ain't that guy. So, you know, they want some pass rush juice, certainly, but he's more limited within the three things that I'm really looking for the Ravens to get than some other players. I think he more competes with Mike Green for snaps than creates a situation where Mike Green can be developed fully. And I still believe, you know, a year in right now, Mike Green and not Malachi Lawrence or anybody that I would have lower in the list than him or probably than anyone in the top six guys of the draft for either of us probably should be really taking away Mike Green's developmental opportunity. He shouldn't lose it. And if he loses playing time to Bain or you know, Reese or Bailey, no problem. Okay. But if he loses playing time to Malachi Lawrence, I'm not particularly sanguine about that. I want to see something where we positively impact Mike Green's development with this draft pick that we made. And they can also do it with the signing too, but with the draft pick. He only had 1 year of top self-production of 3 years in the Big 12, so that was a little bit of a problem. Very fast dip, high motor, very fast off the snap. I think you hit on all that. I thought, you know, actually pretty well-developed bag of moves, honestly, for a college pass rusher. So that's a big positive. But power is not his game. It really shows up in the run, I think, where he can be sealed or kicked out fairly easily. So I don't know how you saw it. If you saw it exactly the same, I don't know if you exactly addressed it. But he projects to me to be a situational pass rusher. Kind of limited value on early downs. It doesn't exactly match the Ravens' need, and that's why I had him a little bit lower. But even so, if he's announced as a what I think is a third round value to the Ravens, and they were to get him there, I'd be pretty excited about it, I think.
Yeah, I saw his running fit slightly differently in the sense that I obviously saw him get moved at times. I thought that there were times when he showed enough in terms of his technique that made me think that he could set an edge. I think the thing for me with the missed tackles that I thought, so the note I had for why that happened as much as it did, and it's not excusing it, it is what it is, when he's trying to disengage at the point of attack, which he did quite a lot, there were plenty of savvy offensive linemen who saw him doing it, saw it coming a mile off, and he did it with an arm over that was just way too expansive. Like he was windmilling this arm over move. And they got right into his armpit. And so he ended up like getting close, but not getting there in terms of the tackle on the runner. And so there was definitely some stuff that I saw in that from that perspective. So really the thing I didn't play into my evaluation, which I would agree wholeheartedly with, is the fact that you don't want him taking developmental snaps away from Mike Green. Like Mike Green is a much higher ceiling pass rusher than Malachi Lawrence, and is way further ahead than he was. He's way further. He's way further ahead than Malachi Lawrence is right now. Yeah. So for me, I would agree with that.
I don't know what Mike Green's age is right now either. I know he lost a year of school, but you know Malachi Lawrence is 23 in July. It could well be Mike Green is roughly the same age. There's another pass rusher. He's 2 years and 3 months younger than, you know, we're going to get to at some point. I'm sure that is a major consideration on that end. Anyway. Malachi Lawrence, so a player either of us I think would like, but you'd take him at 45. Is that where you are on it?
It's the same deal as Zion Young, because obviously Zion Young's one spot higher than him for me. So it's the same deal as him, where like he'd be on the list, but I think there's going to be other guys on the list that I'm probably going to value a little bit higher at 45.
All right, we better get in one more guy before we cut off here, because otherwise I don't think we're gonna get done. We're moving at our typical rate, which is it's great. It's great for having a great football discussion. We're gonna go to my number seven guy, and that's Cashless Howell of Texas A&M. Enormous high motor rush outside linebacker, been an exceptional tackler the last two seasons. At 6'2", 253. The 30 and a quarter inch arms are a real question. That's obviously a question for not just him in this draft. A 4.59 40, so he's got some very real quickness, and a 1.58 10 yard. He'll be 23 in April. He's the SEC Defensive Player of the Year in 2025 and a first team All-American. Finalist for the Nagurski, Bednarik, and Lombardi Awards. That's always a positive thing. His pass rush productivity was in the 92nd percentile. It's better from the right side, the offensive right side, where the Ravens' need is and where he plays less. So the thought would be that, hey, he might not have had all the opportunities he could have had playing over the right tackle and maybe, or right tackle and tight end, and maybe that's an even better opportunity. Career 12.1% missed tackle. It's not terrible, but it's not good either. And 4.4 stops per missed tackle. What else do I have to say? Screen recognition I thought was good. Much too quick for both of the LSU offensive tackles. That was a really good game for him. He really showed up both of those guys. And I don't know who they are. Okay. And they shall remain nameless for this, I guess is the way to put it here. But lightning quick dip. You could call it a ghost move, maybe, where he tries to completely avoid the arm. Get off is very quick. He puts tackles on the defensive. That's great. And if he can maintain at the NFL level, that's something where he can play the overset and he can learn to play that overset even better. I think he needs more violence in his hands. He's trying to do too much just getting by that tackle without contact. I don't mean without contact because that's silly. It's football. But, you know, with as little contact as possible, he needs to do more to play offense against that offensive tackle and get him off his game. He is one of the bendiest players in the class. I think he's a little small and short-armed for ideal edge setting at 30 and a quarter. That's obviously true. He's been okay at it. It's just not really a strength of his. He's a reasonable projection, I think, to Sam, given his playing time and coverage. I had that here somewhere, but I don't have it right in front of me right this second. But he's played there. He hasn't played well there for his career, about 8.0 yards per target and 120 passer rating against. So that doesn't look so well. But I think he would be the early down Sam for the Ravens. He'd be the guy who'd be in there allowing Mike Green to get more obvious pass rush situation reps, but there's no reason why Howell and Green at some point later this season will not be directly competing for important pass rush snaps as well. And Green lost that battle to veterans and other people in his rookie year.
Yeah, so he's my 14 guy. So a bit further down. I think it's probably a similar situation with the Malik Allerans one, actually. I felt like I didn't see, so you hit on everything that I would say in terms of it from his as a pass rusher. I loved, just to add, I thought he had a really violent and accurate cross chop, which is a move that translates well to the NFL, that he lands square. Like, the guy has short arms, right? But he lands that squarely on that outside hand of even good competition. And so it's that type of thing you're looking for when you see a guy with those shorter arms, is like, can he negate that to an extent as an edge rusher just because his hands are really accurate in his moves? And I did think he was. So really like his potential as a pass rusher. My thing that limited him for me was, so some things in his pass rush that I did have some issues with. I do think I thought he read the game better on obvious passing downs. And I thought his get off was better on obvious passing downs. When he got into less obvious passing down, more neutral stuff, the get off wasn't quite as good. And he's built a decent amount of his rush on his ability to get up the field. And so that was one thing that can improve at the next level, but that was one thing that kept him down a bit for me. I also thought there was, like, as much as his hands were accurate up the field, I did see some issues with longer levered offensive tackles up the field when he was trying to get up the field. And so that was the things that sort of brought him down slightly for me in terms of his pass rush potential. And I did worry a bit about his edge setting, which is why I've got him a bit further down, basically, because I don't know that he's a guy who I would want playing the run too consistently early in his career. So that would be my thing with him. But I think it's a similar situation with Lawrence, basically. It's the pick your flavor thing that we talked about already.
Well, fair enough. And it's good that we have some texture in this, because it, you know, it shows we're doing this individually and not, you know, yeah. I'm not working off your draft guide, for example. That'd be pretty clear if that's true. James, always a pleasure to talk football with you. We'll cut off the first episode here. We'll get back to our top six when we get back, though we've heard a couple of them, I think, already. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online or read your stuff.
Yeah, so I'm on X at NFL Ogden. My draft guide is, whenever this drops, it may be out already. It's coming out very soon. So my draft guide, which I do every year, which is focused on the Ravens and gives you sort of in-depth scouting reports on players and gives you their fit with the Ravens. Very specifically, that's coming out soon. You can hear me on the UK Ravens podcast most weeks, and that's a really great podcast. Gordon McGinnis does it as well, so we have a nice back and forth, Gordon and I, on that podcast, so you can definitely check us out there. And I write for Russell Street Report on occasion, and have my own site, redstarbaltimore.com, which is usually now just the guide, but yeah, you can find me all over the place. But yeah, get me on X if you want to talk about stuff.
All right, James, thanks so much for coming on. Other folks out there, hope you'll join us on draft night. We plan to have James on, we hope, for some of the draft, and we'll figure out exactly when. But we'll have a lot of panelists that are high quality, and we really want an interactive experience for the audience too. So we kind of work on a spreadsheet all together. We try and draw in as many people as we can from the stream to give their opinions on things, and it's extremely fun way to watch the draft. I can tell you this, we are certainly not doing it for the money. So the people who do this are just all doing it because they enjoy watching the draft together and talking about football. I hope you'll join us. James, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.